Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. If it's not on mainstream, it's on BBS Radio. I thought I'd just throw that in there. Good evening, everyone. It's so nice to have you here with us on April the 26th here on the East Coast and still April 25th on the West Coast. I got to draw some attention to something I did yesterday. I posted some photos, very unique photos of galaxies and nebulae and a couple of other heavenly bodies, we'll call them. No, not the blonde bimbos from CNN or Headline News. I'm speaking about moons or anomalies out in space, and I posted them to my website, if you haven't heard already, directlightproductions.com, and they are in the photo section. You'll see the very first photo album, which is called Galaxies and Nebulae. If you click on that, it opens up a page of 44 very unique photos that many people until yesterday and all day today had not ever seen before. It's caused quite a stir on the internet. I can tell you that my website is getting lots of visits, which I'm grateful for. And there are some other research sites, educate-yourself.org. Ken Adachi's site has posted an article that I wrote attached to these photos. My opinion about the cover-up of these photos, or the very fact that there are others out in the universe that know how to take pictures, and I can assure you that these photos were not retouched by me in any way. In fact, I know very little about retouching photos. I can change the size of them a little bit and make them fit on a web page, and I know how to print them or scan them, those types of things. But I don't have the time nor the skills to doctor photos, so I can tell you they are in the pristine condition that I receive them in. I encourage you to pay my site a visit. Also, I'd like to thank Jeff Rentz at Rentz.com for posting a link to make you aware that these photos exist. And I'm hoping that people all over the world can see this because, as I said in the title of the article I attached to the photos, this would be the beginning of the end of the cover-up. To just contemplate the fact that some of these photos show things that we have never, ever seen before, and the magnificence of the universe is enough reason to know that we are not alone in the universe, and there is other intelligent life. And that is the purpose for publishing these photos. It's definitely a mind expander. It's definitely a conscious expander to view these photos. And so I encourage you to pass the links around and let people know about them. Tonight we're going to talk about this with my regular Friday evening guest. He is a scientist and inventor. In fact, one of his inventions is the Dynaflux generator. He is also a lecturer, a teacher, and a great person. He's a great guest to have on this show. We've talked about many topics like what we're going to talk about tonight, but specifically we're going to talk about these galactic photos that I published yesterday. And with that, I bring my regular Friday night guest on board Evident Footprints, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, good evening.
Don, how are you? It's good to be back.
Oh, I am. I'm on cloud nine, and that's somewhere out in outer space right now. I can tell you, it's above the chemtrails.
Yeah, I would say it's quite a ways above the chemtrails. I had quite a bit of time to examine the photographs, and it's very easy to tell that this was not taken in a darkened sound studio with some colored lights in the background, I assure you.
Well,
they are magnificent. They are really, really wonderful photographs.
Yes, they're awe-inspiring, to say the least. And the diversity of this whole collage, if you want to call it that, is just astounding. And to contemplate the diversity that there is in the universe, it's just mind-boggling.
Well, one of the most exciting things for me is to see so many views of galaxies from different directions, and the supporting evidence of the spiral content of these huge celestial shapes. I mean, it's so obvious that the spiral and the forces associated with it are truly one of God's most interesting creations. And it's just really incredible the way it shows up on these photographs. It's almost impossible not to be awestruck. I was looking at them, especially I just put on the sideshow and let the thing run constantly and just kept looking at the pictures as they popped up. And it was just amazing to me. I don't know how anybody could look at it and not be aware of the immensity and the variety of the universe. And when you stop and think about it, each one of these galaxies that are shown are, of course, peppered with billions of stars and God only knows how many worlds. And I think you really have to have loose screws if you honestly think that all that territory has no other intelligence in it. It's just mind-boggling. It really is.
Well, you got to read, I'm sure, you at least maybe once, you got to read the article that I wrote. And basically it was just my opinion, you know, when I contemplated, just like you described, the magnanimous nature of these photographs, and that to consider that all this exists out in space, and yet you see these galaxies suspended in space, and you see the vastness of space beyond. It's incomprehensible how huge the universe is.
Oh, and to say the least. I mean, there was one picture there in particular. I don't know if I wrote it down or not. I made a list of some of the more spectacular pictures, but I forgot to put next to the list what was in them. So it's difficult for me to say which is which. But anyway, there's one picture there that actually shows a cluster of galaxies. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's like you say, it's impossible to comprehend. But this cluster picture was magnificent because it showed hundreds of galaxies just all, you know, in the same general area. And you realize that these are actually separated by hundreds of light years of distance from each other. And each one of them is some huge formation of stars, planets, and other celestial objects, the very size of each individual one of these galaxies is beyond comprehension. It does make you feel rather small, to say the least.
Yes. Now, I'm led to understand that the Milky Way galaxy, which was the blue spiral galaxy...
Yes, that's our galaxy.
This is the first time I've... Yes.
Sorry about that.
I'm led to understand and to know that there's about a trillion planets within our galaxy alone. We hear these things of, well, you know, and it was a couple of years ago we started hearing these whisperings that scientists, because of the Hubble telescope, are now presuming that there may be billions of planets. And I thought to myself, that doesn't quite sound right. Of course, we hadn't seen all the pictures that have been coming out recently. And I found it interesting that Reuters released 18 photos this morning, just after several hours after I had released this whole collection of pictures. And they're you know, anything you see in space is absolutely gorgeous. So I don't intend to put down the pictures, but if I compare the quality of the pictures and the clarity and the definition and consider where these might have been taken from, they're awe-inspiring. And that attempt to maybe circumvent the release of these photos on my site was fell far short of outdoing the magnificence of these photos. I did not take these pictures, and I didn't, as I already said in the introduction, I've not retouched them whatsoever. They are what they are, and it's just glorious to see the diversity. And then you wonder what the laws of physics would be in these places, and what the intelligent life would be like. And certainly it's got to be a couple of notches above what we have down here. Would you agree?
I hope so. I like to think so, because I'm very disappointed with the quality of intelligence that we have around us here, particularly in certain areas, which I won't bother to go into. But I will say this. I, as a child, used to look at the night sky and contemplate this type of thing. And, of course, in northern Jersey, where we used to go for the summer, the skies were pretty clear back in the 50s. And you could see a great deal. And it was enough to make you ponder even then. But, of course, you never would be able to see sights like this with the naked eye. And yet, despite the lack of depth into the spatial realms, I was still forced to consider, just by looking at the night sky, you know, how big is the universe? What's out there? How many planets are there? How many planets have intelligent life? And the other thing that I used to think about a lot, and this was totally unprompted, I mean, I was pretty young at the time, I used to always figure that if there were alien beings that were superior to us on some of these planets, then it just felt totally natural to me that there would be other planets that were much less developed in the overall evolutionary scale. And this was the point in time in my life when I was going through my dinosaur crates. And, of course, a lot of kids from our time period were enamored with dinosaurs. They still are today. But the fact that there might be planets that were in the Jurassic state of development or earlier and might in fact have, you know, some primitive life forms that we couldn't even imagine roaming about, stomping about on their surfaces, it just gave me the most wonderful feeling. And I just seem to know intuitively that sprinkled through the universe there were untold billions of worlds in all different types of levels of development. And many, many of them harbor intelligent creatures, some the same as us, some much more advanced. And I honestly believed all of this from a gut level without having the opportunity to discuss it with anybody. And guess what? I still believe it to this very day.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said earlier, Don, I can't conceive of all this territory being created just for the sake of illuminating the night sky, you know, for a handful of earthbound souls to admire. It just doesn't work that way.
Well, and then if you look at the conditions on this planet right now and the way we're destroying it, you can imagine the responsibility that we collectively as humanity or mankind, however you want to refer to us, let's say, in terms of the universal laws and that we're violating, and the other qualities of life, the other qualities of consciousness in these other areas. I'm not in any way saying that the Milky Way is the dregs of universes, or solar systems or galaxies. Our solar system, it has been misrepresented to us about where life is and what the conditions are on planets. Almost as if we shouldn't bother thinking about them. You know, we're told that these temperatures are hundreds and hundreds of degrees on the surface, or at night they go, down to absolute zero, and that life just doesn't exist. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't ring true. In fact, just these Mars photos that you and I have been examining over the past couple of months, off and on, are a perfect example of that. And so, what is it about our consciousness and about the leadership of this world that would keep us from knowing who we are? It just boggles my mind in comparing that to these photos. And to see the love that has been created in the universe. This is beauty. This is not evil.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. But to answer the question that you just posed, I think it's one of the most incredible forms of treachery imaginable. Just for a second, forget about the large scale implications of what you just brought up. And let's examine the way in which a little individual household operates with respect to a child. You have a brand new little baby, and as soon as he's conscious of his parents, he realizes that they are totally dependent upon them for his sustenance, his care, support, and he trusts them. He trusts that they are going to nurture and instruct and protect him or her as he grows and develops. Well, that same type of trust is instinctively extended to the people that we have in positions of leadership around the world. And it is extended by all people who believe and trust in the system because they have been instructed and explained since childhood that these people who are in these special positions in government and in science and in religious institutions are all there to do us wonderful things and to support us, educate us. And if this trust is violated by the very people that we have been brought up to believe in, that to me is the very worst type of criminal activity, because that would be very much like, you know, the people who are in charge of this brand new baby, instructing it in a lie and using that trust to fabricate a complete way of life, that is untrue, but is to the benefit, let's say, of the parents. And just imagine the pain and the disorganization that child would eventually feel when that bubble burst and he realized that he had been spoon-fed a lot of malarkey all his life. Just imagine the incredible emotional letdown that child would have. Well, actually, our society is like a child, and I think that once the bubble bursts and they realize that they have been spoon-fed enormous amounts of malarkey ever since their youth, they're going to realize that the worst type of evil has to be behind the betrayal of this trust. And I think it's going to change things for the better once the commotion dies down. But without any doubt, that's the kind of thing we're toying with here once we begin to open these doors and people realize, hey, there's things going on that's above and beyond what we've been told. Just for example, let's take that one picture that you mentioned, the spiral nebulae of the Milky Way. You took that standing on your roof, right, Don? I mean, let's face it.
Actually, I took it at the bowling alley.
The bowling alley. Well, I mean, you don't really have to be an astrophysicist to realize that there's no way in the world that that picture was taken by ordinary means, considering that we are in there somewhere. It's very obvious it was taken from beyond the confines of our planet and our solar system and our galaxy. And if people can't grasp that and realize there's more going on here than meets the eye, then they'll never have this transformation of consciousness that we're hoping for. But I don't believe that's the case. I think that most people intuitively know all this already. And the real battle that's going on is between their acceptance of the fact that they've been duped and the strength of the evidence that's presented. Because to be in denial is really to protect yourself from the type of injury that we're describing. Nobody wants that type of hurt that goes along with the incredible collapse of trust that has been extended. And so once that denial shield begins to crumble and more evidence of this sort begins to sink in, I think you're going to see some interesting stuff happen. I really do.
Well, I see, and I'm sure you would agree, I mean, we're communicating on the same wavelength here. We're both reiterating or at least, you know, complimenting each other's case as to the importance of these photos. The very fact that there is an expanse just in the Milky Way galaxy alone that is beyond our comprehension. Really, it's beyond our comprehension how huge that one galaxy is. No wonder someone would say, well, this has to be faked, or this was done with Photoshop or some kind of computer software, because that individual to respond that way is operating totally from within the matrix, totally from in this controlled, constructed prison that we are in. And it's a prison of the mind and the body, and with the intention of imprisoning the spirit. And these photos show the power of spirit. First of all, God's spirit, that God could have created this. And this is just what we're seeing in 44 photos. I mean, where does it end? You know, where does it end?
It may not end, but the point is that 44 photos, beautiful as they are, is insignificant compared to what's out there.
Yes, that's the whole point I'm making. So this thing, and you talked about, you know, the consciousness of the child. Well, you know, when children come here to the earth, they know this stuff. They would recognize these pictures right away, and if they could speak earlier, if we were more competent as teachers to the children, they would be speaking far sooner than 1 year or you know, 7, 8, 9 months old. They'd be speaking almost out of the womb and telling us things that we're doing wrong, and although the children aren't here necessarily to fix things, they have their own purpose for being here too. But we shirk our responsibility in nurturing not just education, but consciousness. This is all, you know, these pictures are consciousness. There is thought in here. There is love in here. There is music. There's mathematics. There's physics. And the law, I can guarantee you that the laws of physics that apply to one of these galaxies are not the same laws that apply to another. If they were all the same, they would probably all look alike, or eventually all take on a very similar appearance and a similar function. And for people to resort to the low level of saying, well, these are fabricated pictures, to me, you know, I want to say to that person, get your popcorn, get your beer, and turn on American Idol. You know, stay out of the argument, because you're just trying to bring it down to the same mind-controlled reality that you're living in. Now, I put these pictures out to awaken people, not to have people shut down. But that's like you said, the denial that people are in about seeing something like this really points out all the shortcomings that we have as not just a society here in the United States, but all over the world. But I can guarantee you the people that are looking at these photos, and there are a lot of them looking at them, they're awake. And there are going to be a lot more that are going to see them. And there's going to be an elevation of consciousness. Because this discussion we're having is not unique. I can guarantee you this type of discussion is going on all over the world tonight.
And rightfully so, Doug. Rightfully so.
Now,
you know what I think we should do, though? Do you have access to your computer while you're talking?
Yes, I do.
I think it would be really neat if you could pull up some of these photographs, because even though I can't see them, I have looked at all of them.
Okay.
And I could at least make remarks with your help on some of the descriptions about some of the things that impressed me. For instance, the colors alone are just breathtaking. And then, of course, there's the overall geometry that's inherent in each of these photographs. Whether we're looking at nebulae or whether we're looking at the galaxies, or even in some cases there are several shots of planets and moons, it's just breathtaking. And I thought it would be worth commenting on, even though I wasn't sure how we could do it. But for instance, in the beginning of the slideshow, there's one that is referred to as the red rectangle.
Oh, yes, that's one of my favorites.
Yes, it is so different. I mean, it is so incredible to see. You know, we are so used to seeing everything being in the form of circles and spirals and orbits. And yet, somehow, this particular rectangular shape appears in the... in this one photograph, and the colors associated with it are spectacular. I mean, red doesn't really define it. You have to see it to believe it.
Yes, it's glimmering from the center as if that was this like a center sun, although, you know, there's a lot more going on than that, obviously. It could be millions of suns or billions of suns in there and stars. It to me, in a way, it almost resembles a butterfly too. You know, it doesn't have the exact symmetry of a butterfly wing, but it has the flares going up kind of at 45 degree angles, and symmetrical flares going downward at 45 degree angles. You have these two intersecting lines at 45 degree angles to each other with this brilliant, a glimmering, shimmering center that looks like a jewel. I mean, if you didn't know better, you might think this was a picture of some kind of a special cut ruby or something like that, you know, with variations in color. It's just
it's striking. And as you said, that bright, the very intense brilliance in the center, where it turns to like a white or a more intense light. That gives the impression, or at least it did to me, that you're almost looking at a hole in a fabric. It's really interesting. I mean, actually, a lot of the centers of these spiral galaxies and nebulae have that one exceedingly bright spot in the middle. And it almost looks like you're looking into a black hole at just the right angle to see that there's the light is coming from something on the other side. And, you know, one of the picture, one of the mental images I got was that if you went through the center of this thing, you'd be in a universe where there was all light. And on our side, we're just seeing the little pinholes in the curtain that separates the two. It's really amazing. The other one was Spiral Galaxy M101, which I thought just absolutely caught the entire nature of the spiral arms and the the whirling structure of the whole thing. I'm not sure where that is, but I know it's after the red rectangle.
Yes, I'm. It's just a couple. It's like two rows down from there. Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
it's a striking photograph, Don. It really is.
Oh yes. Now, when you consider that the Milky Way photo is from about 10 light years away, this spiral galaxy M101, that might be. I don't know the exact size of it, but it certainly the spirals flare out quite a bit wider, you know. And there's still this symmetry to it. You know, how many millions and billions and and trillions of miles is that? You know, this is just beyond comprehension. I feel like my mind has just stretched in every direction beyond, you know, beyond my head. Okay. They're all very gorgeous, every one of these. Going back, I wanted to go back to that red, they call it the red rectangle. I would have called it the red butterfly almost, or jewel. I have the sense that the center is emanating sound waves. Of course, they're light waves, but that galaxy might be one which is of a frequency that the light appears to be creating a symmetrical kind of a linear pattern that connects the 45 degree angles, and you see as the light moves outward from the center bright spot that we were talking about, it looks almost like ripples in a pond, you know, where someone threw a rock in the pond and then you saw the symmetric ripples. It has ripples as if sound is playing a role in what is happening there.
Well, it's interesting you should say that because, you know, according to Tesla's work, much of the universe functions on longitudinal waves. And longitudinal waves are essentially, in the realm of physics, are essentially considered sound waves. So even though they might be light in nature, if they are following the force patterns and the mechanism which is comparable to sound, and you might be picking this up psychically, Don, you know, maybe we're looking at a manifestation of something far different from what you get when you turn on your flashlight.
Yes. And this has a three-dimensionality to it. It's almost like you're looking at two three-sided pyramids. Well, maybe there's a fourth side, but it's a little hard to tell, you know, from this angle. They could be two three-sided pyramids touching the center, if you understand what I mean.
Oh, I do. Yeah, definitely.
Now, the one that was next to that, by the way, NGC 6745, it reminds me of an upside-down frying pan. And it's basically all gold, and it's got a silver lining, a silvery white lining toward the top of the picture, and a little bit on the bottom, and it has a blue handle on it. You know, it when I look at that, it reminds me of an upside-down frying pan. Very interesting shape compared to some of the other ones.
Now, was that a galaxy or a nebula that you're referring to?
It's called NGC 6745, so that could be maybe a cluster.
Are you saying N as in nighttime?
Nancy, yeah. NGC.
Oh, well, then it's probably a nebula, because I noticed that all the nebulas have nomenclature that begins with an N.
Okay.
Nebula number 6826. So, there's quite a few of them that start with an N. But anyway, you're right. They're just incredible. And the one that follows is pretty interesting, too. Nebula M, as in Mary, 2-9 was one of the ones that impressed me.
Okay. Yes, that one, that's the one I put on the article, article page, yes. That's very interesting. Again, we have that that symmetry, as if, the longitudinal waves are playing a role in that. And the colors are in bands, and very different from the colors of most of the other pictures. These magenta, almost violet, but more like magenta colored, blue, and then you have some like almost like turquoise, and it's a very translucent picture. You have the, it looks sort of like a stretched out hourglass almost lying outside.
Yeah, it definitely has the quality of a glass. Or a gem of enormous size, and you can look right through it. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And
now
and
the
then
other
the...
one that.
Okay,
sorry,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, of all of the ones that were there, one of the ones that struck me the most was not a galaxy, and it's not a nebulae. It's a much smaller celestial body. But it was so clear and so beautifully taken that I really wanted to comment on it, and that's the picture of the moon Io.
Yes, I knew you were going there. I'm right there. Yes, you can see the craters or the pock marks, if you want to call them that. Definitely, it appears that there's ice there, so there would be water there. Difficult to ascertain if that is clouds and that there would be an atmosphere.
Is there anything that gives a feeling of scale, like from how far out that was taken, Don?
I really couldn't tell you. If I tried to intuit it, I don't know.
Well, let's put it this way. It's clearer than a lot of pictures of our own moon.
Mm-hmm.
And our own moon is, what, 250,000 or so miles away from Earth on an average?
Yes.
So anyhow, however this picture was taken, let's assume we use that as a reference point. They're taking a picture from approximately 200,000 miles away or something like that. Of course, we don't know. I don't know the size of Io with respect to our own moon, but the point I'm trying to make here is that the clarity of this thing is utterly incredible.
Okay, I was going to say, my intuition tells me it's about 180,000 miles.
okay, that's fine. So, you know, that's the other thing that struck me was to be that far away and be able to take pictures with that kind of clarity and show that kind of detail is in itself an incredible accomplishment. But as you pointed out, you can sort of almost see that there are hints of an atmosphere or at least some kind of vapor in the air and, you know, the pockmarks on the planet and what have you. But also the general character of the planet, well, I shouldn't say planet, moon, is so different from our moon. You know, it's just another example of how much variety is offered to us in the spectrum of experiences that await in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's really an incredible picture. I looked at that at least 10 times. I don't know why it strikes me so much, but I just found it very, very deeply attractive.
Well, you may recognize it from someplace
beyond. From my travels.
Yeah. Could have been astral traveling. the Orion Nebula, M42, which was the one that was above it, in the way the layout is very interesting as well. The diversity of the colors and, it's just beyond me we don't have reference points. We can't really see where these are in relationship to where we are. But I guess it doesn't really matter, does it?
it doesn't matter to me personally, but it would be really interesting if there was some way that you could portray that type of a thing, because it would only serve to show how incredibly immense everything is and how unbelievably tiny we individuals really are. I mean, if you just refer back, for instance, to the Milky Way galaxy picture, and somebody was to say to you, now, I mean, there might be astronomers who know how to do this. I don't, personally. But there might be somebody who could actually say, oh, well, our solar system is right over here on the edge, you know. And then you realize that even if you could see that one little tiny sparkle of light that represents our sun, somewhere around that sun there are then 9 recognized planets, and the third one from the sun is the one that we live on, which to us looks enormous on our terrestrial scale of consciousness. And then, despite the enormity of the Earth, we have to locate you and me in separate cities and separate geographical areas, which in themselves are quite enormous. Like my state is pretty big, your state is pretty big. And then you have to also go to a specific neighborhood and a specific street and a specific house. And in that domain is this bag of water that's thinking about all this and just beginning to realize that it's essentially insignificant. And, when you look at it from that perspective, it's pretty humbling. Or it should be.
Mm-hmm.
There may be some people unaffected by it, but I'm not one of them.
Yeah. You know, Tesla keeps coming to my mind, because you have to consider where, that he was tapping into this source that makes all this work. You know, all this love and all this beauty and all this infinite intelligence that was behind creating this. And in, even though in terms of where we are today, he understood the concepts. In fact, he was probably ahead of where we were, just on the basis of his intention to use it for good and not for evil, for nefarious purposes. So to consider that he was tapping into the universe to bring to us all the things that he intended to bring, many of which were stifled for a variety of reasons, it's amazing. And then you wonder, okay, he finished his life here on the earth and he moved on. Where is he? You know, what is he doing now? What revelations is he bringing to another area of the universe?
Well, you know, that brings up a very interesting point. When I was younger, I used to study an awful lot of material from Oriental religions and Oriental philosophies and whatnot. And one of the belief structures that I came across was, the fact that reincarnation does not necessarily have to pertain just to souls coming back to this planet. And as you pointed out, if you look at that universe as a huge, unbelievably infinite source of possible homes that a soul could possibly go to, our dear friend Mr. Tesla could be anywhere in that picture doing whatever he does best. And that's a very interesting thought, you know, that depending on perhaps the relationship between a given planet's evolutionary vibration and the vibration of your own soul at the point of departure, you may very well be sucked or attracted toward a particular planet, a particular solar system, a particular galaxy, which is going to represent your next incarnation. Of course, these are my beliefs. I'm not trying to put anything on anybody's religious beliefs. But even if you don't believe that stuff, just thinking about it is pretty amazing. Because even if you don't buy the idea of reincarnation, there are many, many people who have the ability, yourself included, Don, to mentally or spiritually visit these worlds without dying and without leaving this world. And so it's just another expression of wandering through an infinite universe to essentially enjoy the wonders of this vast creation. And then attribute praise, recognition, glory, and love towards the being that obviously is responsible for it.
Well, Jesus himself said, "In my Father's house there are many mansions." Now, are we looking at mansions here? And
I would.
And, now let's talk about Jesus for a moment. As the Son of God, think of the responsibility he was given just to come down to this funky place, let alone, you know, certainly to other places in the universe. Imagine the experiences that he had and is having.
Well, yes, and you know what's interesting? There are very few, at least I have not had the honor of meeting too many pastors or priests or anything like that have an open mind to this type of possibility. But the one dear friend of mine and yours who you've had on the show a few times, David High, who is also a pastor, he himself ponders the possibility, what if Jesus, after he ascended from this world, was given the task of going to redeem some other world? I mean, why can't we think that way? What is the problem?
You know, I know that to be the case.
Well, it may very well be the case. You know, who are we, insignificant as we are? And I just gave you an example of how insignificant we truly are. These peculiar little bags of water occupying this planet to limit what could be the case in a realm so vast and a consciousness and a mind so incredible as to create it all. You know, how can we possibly put limitations on that and all the wonders associated with it? I think anybody who can really do that is definitely suffering from an inflated ego. Because if you really see yourself as what you are, you should keep your mouth shut and your eyes open, not the other way around. And that's exactly what we run into. People going through life with blinders on their eyes and their mouth in high gear. It should be the opposite.
Well, when I contemplate, and just listening to what you're saying, and I'm looking at these pictures, and your words are sinking into my consciousness, and or resonating with my consciousness, and I'm thinking about, what about all the things we can't see with our physical vision? What about the glue that holds all this together? What about the essence that makes all this possible? Are we not a part of it? And so, you know, in this spiral galaxy called the Milky Way, we are just playing a very minuscule role of the totality of all that we see in these pictures and all that we may never see. And yet it's all the concept of oneness. It all is a part of the whole. We can only be one. And that's the message we can't seem to get down here.
Well, I don't know that we can't get it. I think we're prevented from getting it. And the thing that's interesting about it is there are some individuals, yourself included, that don't seem to succumb to the brainwashing and have always retained the connection with the divinity and with the cosmos and with the higher realms of spirit. And it must really tick certain people off that there are individuals who cannot be brainwashed. But you know what? I thank God that that's the case. Just imagine if every one of us were dumbed down to the point of being nothing more than a stupid fence post. This world would really be in some shape. But I think that the fact that that doesn't happen is a good indication that there's a hierarchy of consciousness even on this world. And some of the ones that are more developed and more spiritually advanced can see through the malarkey and say, you know, hey, I've been through all this in other worlds and other times. You're not going to shove it down my throat. And those individuals are the beacons that we should gravitate towards. Those individuals are the ones that we should be listening to, not the beer commercials and the ranting politicians and the lunatics that run the show, because they're already out of touch. It's in the wrong direction. We want to elevate ourselves toward the mind and heart of God who made all this stuff.
Okay, Jim, excuse me. We've got a caller on line one. Would you like to take a call?
Heavens, yes.
Okay. Would you please state your name and where are you calling from, please?
My name is Dan, and I'm calling from Oregon, Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. Dan, welcome to Evident Footprints. You have a question or comment for Jim Murray?
I just kind of streamed into this and was listening to it. I was trying to catch Dr. Fred Bell, but I was just thinking when he said, you know, the guy, the creator, follow these people. In other words, you don't open your mouth, you be quiet, and you listen. But if it's a person like that, I guess I'm trying to relate it to, I mean, if it's God or whoever you choose to call it, I mean, he's thinking about like our not just our solar system, but like our whole galaxy, right? I mean, he's able to keep a consciousness because, you know, if he can't see it or think about it, do you think maybe you could? I mean, hypothetically, right? I mean, I'm just, so.
I'm not quite understanding your question. Can you restate it? Speak up just a little bit louder, Dan.
Okay. Well, I don't know a lot about Jim Murphy. I just kind of streamed into something, and I'm sorry if you can't hear me. This is a cell phone, so it might be a bad connection. I guess what I'm asking him is, I'll just make a comment. The people that have been doing the media have been doing this for a long time. I mean, you know, geez. I mean, even if you go back to when Jesus was supposedly around, I mean, they were making money, whoever it was, Romans, whoever, right? So what we're seeing on TV is this, I mean, you know, it goes back or, you know, they don't know. Of course they know. I mean, they're just feeding us what we don't know. And they've been doing it for a long time. It's, you know, they got the biggest stick right now. I mean, we do, whatever. We're in America. I'm an American. But they've been doing this for a long time. What does that mean? I guess that's all I'm going to say. Thank you for listening to me talk. I'm sorry that I just streamed in on it and I caught him talking about Jesus and, you know, and all that. And I guess I was out of context. Forgive me.
No. Your point is well taken. Jim, do you want to comment on Dan's statement?
Well, first, Don, you'll have to relay the message to me because for some reason at this end, all I could hear was like chirps and gargles. I couldn't make out a word that he was saying.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry for that, but... Yeah.
Basically, he said he came in and caught our show maybe by accident, or maybe he was supposed to hear
this. Yeah, well, no. I listened to Dr. Fred Bell. I listened to him occasionally. And I was just picking through the stations. I just hit it, you know, and I saw your show. And it was streaming, and it wasn't really by accident. It was by accident this time of night.
Okay.
Normally, I'm a George Norrie guy.
Okay. Well, I like George Norrie, too.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you called in, Dan. Thank you for the call. And I'll kind of paraphrase what Dan said for
Thank
you, Jim. Basically, he's saying that this has been going on for a long time, this suppression of knowledge. Even in Jesus' time, it was going on. And it's always been about making money. And of course, that's if you listen to Evident Footprints, Dan, you're going to hear some mention of that almost every night on the show. We're about bringing the truth to the people and about breaking this matrix into little pieces so that we can begin to see the light and see the truth and raise our consciousness. We're on a destructive path if we allow things to go as they have been going for thousands and thousands of years. And Jim, go ahead if you want to comment on that.
Well, I agree with what he said. I mean, the people that are in charge obviously know about these things that they're suppressing. And they know the importance of them. That's why they're suppressing them. And to focus an entire civilization's consciousness on making money, it's actually an incorrect point of focus, because in doing so, what we inadvertently wind up doing is working for their purposes. They're the ones who are all about money. Money, there's nothing wrong with money. You know, a lot of people say, money is the root of all evil. It says so right in the Bible, but actually it doesn't say that at all. It says the love of money is the root of all evil. Money in itself is a very worthwhile thing, and it can be a wonderful tool, but it is not a way of life. It shouldn't be any more than a hammer or a pair of pliers is a way of life. That's idiotic. So, you know, it's the same kind of a thing. Money is a tool that allows society to do certain things. But once people become obsessed not only with the concept of money, but with making endless amounts of it, then that's where there's true evil involved. And just look at all of the garbage that we're forced to wade through on account of the love of money. wars, famine, all sorts of theft, you know, just things that are pulled off on a global scale that are so incredible we can't even think about it. And this is the type of nonsense that they revel in. So
okay.
I understand where this guy is coming from, and I agree with him. But I think it's the focus needs to go the other way, and that's what our goal is, Don.
Yes. Okay, Dan, does that help clarify our position?
That helps an awful lot. Thank you.
I'm still
listening, too. Even after I hang up, I'll just unmute the laptop. Yeah, people just need to realize what are they drawing towards them? I mean, it's what are they drawing towards them? Right? And it's either what they want or it's what they see. You know, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, we have been putting forth the message for some time that we have a responsibility individually and collectively. And when we begin to exercise that responsibility, we can put our intention on these issues and we can cause them to change. We can cause our creations to take the place of all of this oppression that we're facing. That's what the powers that be don't want to happen.
Well, yeah, they don't want it to happen. But, you know, when it happens and wherever you're at, I mean, if you just, you know, people need to look around locally. What is it locally? You know, I mean, you know, what can they do locally?
Start with where you are. That would be my best advice. If you're going to take individual responsibility, you've got to start within yourself. And then reach out for those of like mind.
Yes.
And before you know it, there's a saying that everybody knows 10 people. Mm-hmm. You get your 10 people together, and they get their 10 people together, and before too long, we're all together. Works as simple as that.
That is what it is. Yeah. You're exactly right. I agree. I think that, you know, and I just... Everybody knows 10 people. I don't know. I try to know most everybody before I meet them. Anyway, this was a good call. I mean, this is a real good call. I picked up the phone at the right time. Gentlemen, have a good evening. I'm going to sign off now.
Okay. Keep listening, Dan. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye now.
Okay. Well, Jim,
that was exciting. That was our first caller in all these months.
Yes. Now, we've had people call into the show before, but, you know, your stuff is, I say your stuff, your contribution to the show is so interesting that people want to listen. And see, we provoked some thought here in someone, and something that you said or we said together resonated, and they responded. And that's what it's all about.
Absolutely.
So now we are, believe it or not, we are already out of time, and this has been a really interesting show because we've touched on some things that touch the heart and touch the soul, and we're really seeing little specks of the soul of the universe here in these pictures, and as huge as these galaxies and nebulae are. It's beyond comprehension to consider how large the space is within which they are contained.
I certainly agree with you there. It's not even worth trying to do it because you can't put the ocean into a tin cup.
And yes.
And that's exactly what that's, you know, when we try to do that, it strains the mind because we are part of that whole thing, and you cannot put that whole thing into a part. And that's exactly why the consciousness needs to be reversed. Now, all of the ancients always said exactly that. You need to reach out with your mind and heart in order to understand what we're part of. And in order to do that properly, the first step is to realize we are part of something larger. Larger.
Well, then, in that spirit, then this is all us that we're looking at here.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, we can pick this up again too, Don. There's no reason why. I mean, it's an endless source of possible conversation.
Oh, yes, yes. There are more that I'd like to speak, or there's more I'd like to say about, you know, what we're seeing here, and I'll give you another week to study up and prepare for your quiz.
Yeah, I'll be happy to. I'll be really happy to.
And, you know, I'm interested in any input that you have about the nature of what we're looking at here. You know, give that some contemplation. You picked out some of my favorite photos, by the way. The M106, the red and the blue. It's interesting how the blue swirls around this almost red disc of light. It's just beyond your wildest imagination.
Yeah, the possibilities are truly endless. You know, in closing, one thing I would really like to say as a challenge, not only for me, but for anybody that cares to pick it up, and that is that if we go back to that photo of the Milky Way galaxy, I know from past studies that our solar system is somewhere on the rim of that galaxy. It's on the outer rim. And I know that it's not too far from the equator of that galaxy. But it would be very, very interesting to actually try to locate where we are in that picture. I don't mean literally, but I mean approximately.
Mm-hmm.
And once you knew that, I think it would give a lot of information as to where that picture was taken from relative to us,
mm-hmm.
which really is the key of all what we've been talking about.
Yes, and then it raises the question. You would have to think, as involved as our government is in space, would they not have seen photos like this? Would they, or is it possible that they took some of these photos? One would have to ask that question.
Well, whoever took it has access to technology that we're not supposed to have. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Yes, we'll leave it at that. And I look forward to next week's show with bated breath. So I want to thank you, Jim, for a wonderful show. This is going to be a classic. And it will be available in the archives, I'm sure.
Well, I hope I made some kind of a contribution, and I do look forward to continuing on the same subject because it's something that I find very special to pursue, Don.
Okay.
No problem.
All right. Thank you very much, Jim. I'm going to say goodnight to you and say goodnight to the audience. We will be back Monday through Friday next week. And, of course, I do the TNT News Hour on Wednesday, 1 p.m. Pacific. Also tune into that and hear some news that you don't get on the mainstream, as well as listen to Don Newsom on the TNT News Hour every Monday afternoon, same time, 1 p.m. Pacific. Did I say Eastern? I meant to say Pacific. Anyway, I wish everyone a peaceful, joyful, and love-filled night, and special thanks to Seth and Don for making this program possible, running the sound, and doing all the dirty work behind the scenes. Guys, we love you. Folks, have a very good night.